Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Doc of the Town. We haven't chatted with our friend Dr. Garrick Olson for a while, and we're very excited to get caught up with him. Dr. Garrick Olson, of course, is with Allina Health of Hastings. He is also with Refined Skin of Red Wing and Rochester, and it's just a treat always to chat it up with you. How are things going?
Going so much better now. There's been some hiccups, and everybody's had such a confusing holiday season, and now that we're through Valentine's Day, I think we can really start thinking about, you know, we're getting people vaccinated, and so much of that's been going in the right direction. So I've been doing better and better all the time. The article that you sent me made me start thinking a lot about being tired. So many people are talking about being tired. The first time I remember really examining tiredness goes back to when I was in high school taking Spanish classes. In Spanish, they have multiple words for tired. And all of them, we could say tired, and it might mean any of these things. But there's the word cansada, and that's tired and weary and wearing out and a little bit of sleepiness in it. And then there's fatigado, that's tired and weary. And then there's agotado, that's exhausted or beaten down.
Oh.
And then there's tener sueño, that's to be sleepy. So all of these things we would say tired for. We have other nuanced words that you can use, but it struck me when I was in high school that here's a language that does such a nice description of all the different types of tired, that tired alone seems like kind of a weak word to use when you can give so much more information with a more specific word. For example, when I was in college, I remember people would always talk about how tired they were, but it was just they were trying to brag about how busy they were or how hard they were working. They probably weren't that tired, but that was the word that they would use to show that they were pushing themselves to the point of some suffering, and the suffering was tired, and shouldn't we all be very impressed by that? Another way of using tired, which is a little bit ingenuine, but is meant to mean something else, too. This came home to roost for me recently because in December, I had to have heart surgery. I had a five-vessel bypass surgery. You know, I thought, how quickly will a person recover from this? And it turns out it's quite slowly, and there's a lot of different types of tired that I got to experience afterward. For example, if I were very refreshed, I would be able to do some reading. And then as soon as I got too tired to read, I would watch some TV, something or other. And then if I got too tired to that, I'd listen to music with my eyes closed. And after that, there was nothing else to do but maybe try to sleep a little bit. And in the early part of my recovery from the heart surgery, I was sleeping, you know, 20 hours a day. I was sleeping so very much. And the body was putting all of its energy inside the healing, so it really didn't have much energy left over for things like reading or watching TV or completing sentences. At the time, I was only able to complete about half a sentence, then I'd have to pause and take a breath. But all those different types of tired there can fall into all different kinds of fatigue. Like a lot of this after heart surgery fatigue for me was the body getting busy with all the healing. But then it struck me there are all sorts of different kinds of fatigue. You know, there's that kind of mental fatigue where you just can't pay attention to something anymore and you need a break from that. And then I think the one that most of us think about where it might be kind of a dangerous fatigue and maybe I should see my doctor about it is when you have an energy that's low, like I don't have the energy to do something. There are things that can cause that. There are some medications that have a side effect where people have a lower energy. And there are other illnesses that can cause you to have low energy, like having a low testosterone or a lot of the other hormone problems like Cushing's disease, diabetes, and thyroid problems, or even having an anemia. If you don't have enough blood cells to carry your oxygen around, you're not going to be able to do as much. People will often feel this kind of low energy and think, maybe my vitamin levels are off. Maybe I need more vitamin something or other. And so they'll try that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with trying a multivitamin. But I also think that we can be a little bit complacent at saying, I'll just take a vitamin and not check it out. I still think for that kind of low energy, most sensible to see your doctor about it. Sometimes you'll have this kind of fasting, I'm trying to lose weight, and that'll sap some of your energy too. And then you can have the opposite, where after you have this enormous Thanksgiving meal, you've got low energy there too. So it can be on either side of that. And then there's another one that has more of a linguistic history to it too. We might just call that low motivation. And that happens very much with the depression. it's one of the hallmarks of depression when people are noticing that they don't want to do things that they normally enjoy. It's called anhedonia. But it has origins of, and this is a little bit linguistic and theatrical, well, modern day, we would say that this is melancholy. This is the sadness that's giving you this tiredness and low motivation. But that used to be a word used for when people were losing blood through their gastrointestinal tract, and they would have this dark-colored stool, and that was melena from the colon, and it became melancholy. So that would speak to an anemia being a crossover for low motivation depression in our modern linguistic system. So it's interesting how these can kind of cross-pollinate each other over decades. And then there's sleepy. Some people are just sleepy because they might have some kind of obstructive sleep apnea, or they might just have really bad sleep hygiene and stay up too late watching Netflix. They don't get enough sleep. And then there's other things that people get, like eye fatigue, which just makes you feel so sleepy. And that can be from itchy eye allergies that just make you want to close your eyes, or it can be from having a glasses prescription that's new or a little different, or maybe not correct, or trying to strain your eyes with too much computer time or screen time. And then there's other illnesses like chronic fatigue syndrome, or some of the fibromyalgia-connected syndromes, or even this post-Lyme disease inflammatory condition. And those people have this fatigue all the time, and it can't be traced to so many of the other types of fatigue that we talked about. And then there's even kind of this stress fatigue, you know, where you've been under some kind of stress for so long that it might give you anxiety that keeps you from sleeping, and you get to that state of just being sick of whatever the thing is that's bugging you. Another one that I think a lot of us like, another fatigue is exercise fatigue, where you've done some kind of accomplished exercise, and you just feel this kind of good soreness or fatigue after the exercise. So we can kind of break this down into so many different categories, like physical or mental or emotional. But one of the sources I was looking at after you prompted me was something called mission fatigue. I didn't quite understand what that was, so I looked into it a little bit more. And it has to do more with when you're doing something and it seems to not really jive with what you were hoping to do. So some people would call this burnout, like, this isn't quite what I signed up for. I still need to do this job or this relationship or this doesn't fit in with the mission that I'd set out to have. And that can make people feel very fatigued at trying to confront doing that kind of work. One fun kind of fatigue that I'm pretty sure a lot of us are looking forward to getting is jet lag. Wouldn't that be great if we could do some travel again?
Yes.
We could get a little jet lag, which is this, you know, it's about your circadian rhythm and having to recreate sleep hygiene in a different part of the world. But golly, I kind of miss getting jet lag and trying to reset my clock that way. And then a lot of us are experiencing something that's probably not written up yet, because we're experiencing COVID fatigue. Some people are after the infection. They're getting this kind of fatigue state that seems to act a little bit like chronic fatigue. And then there's also people that are just getting tired of living in masks, tired of being separate from people, and tired of not being able to hug people. You know, these are things that people can have as a COVID fatigue. So from the article that you sent me, we look at, well, how can we reverse some of this? And our usual way is to use rest, right? Like the seven kinds of rest was what your article was going over. It was in INC period, and it was on Apple News. They broke it down into these seven parts. There's the physical fatigue, and that would need physical rest, like getting sleep earlier. Mm-hmm. And then there's the mental fatigue. And for that, they recommended taking very brief breaks from whatever is mentally fatiguing you, whether it's something with work or trying to figure out something at home. Very often stepping away and looking in another direction will be a relief. It'll give you some return to function, but it will also allow your brain to reshift its gears a little bit and give you the insight that you might not have had if you had just tried to keep pulling like a mule toward this thing. And then there's another one that they brought up that wasn't a part of the other lists that I've already mentioned. Sensory fatigue. I remember an example of this when my children were very small, and we'd take them to the grocery store and they'd be seeing all these different colors and shapes and sounds, and then we'd get home from the grocery store and they'd fall asleep. It was just like it was too sensory overload. I'm out. That was too much. I know that feeling too, and you know, a lot of us have done this where you've been on an extended camping trip, you've been out in the woods doing something, and then you return and there's the grocery store again, and you're like, there's a lot of colors and smells. And I'm kind of used to just smelling pine trees and just seeing pine trees here. So that could be, I understand what that is. And the trick with that is to try to give yourself a little break so that you're not overloaded. You give yourself a little breaks of silence. And they also described something that was a creative fatigue. When you're trying to approach something that needs some creativity, sometimes you have to back away from it and let it simmer, and then the solution will pop up for you. And then there's emotional fatigue, and that you have to make, this was interesting because the article described it, you have to make space to genuinely feel your emotions instead of doing what we normally do, which is temper our expression of our emotions to suit the environment. I mean, we're civilized people. You're not always just going to be saying exactly what's on your mind. Maybe in parts of New York City you would, but not routinely around here. People temper, but they said, you know, give yourself a little bit of free space to sometimes be able to do that, not necessarily in a way that might harm any social relationships, but that, and that was the next one, is social, and that's trying to give yourself a break from being around people that are fatiguing or draining. And we all know that there are some people that you get around and it feels like it's not refreshing to you, and there are other people that may feel very refreshing to be around. So to have the wisdom to try to sort out how much time you can really allot with a person based on how much energy they give or take from you, which may have more to do with you than them. But whatever is happening in that relationship, you have to be able to set your timer ahead of time and know, I've only got 5 minutes or I've got 5 hours with this one. And then there was one they called spiritual. And this was where you would be deliberate about being awed. Well, a lot of us have a pretty standard spiritual thing. We've got, you know, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, or we've got some stuff like that. But then even the people that don't follow that standard monotheistic setup for spirituality can very often benefit from being awed by some great beauty or some clever turn of phrase or something else that is very artful. To allow yourself to be awed is often recharging. And I know that, you know, me, I'm a Lutheran, I go to Lutheran church, maybe not as often as I used to before COVID, but I feel that when I return from church, that I feel like I've had some rest from some of enduring spiritual fatigue. So I think this all really fits together. So I hope it's okay. I wrote up something that I call the plan here.
Oh, yes.
Because all of us feel these kinds of fatigues. And we are all very unique about how we experience them and how we can solve those fatigue problems. So I would say, first of all, this is not self-serving, but first of all, see your doctor. Start there. I mean, find out if you have a hormone problem. I mean, it's just a blood draw, and you can get your hormone levels done for fatigue. But I also think that in the interview with your doctor, and we really rely on this, the talking part is so important. So if you can, even before you see your doctor, think about, how long have I been feeling this way? When did it change? How has it shifted, whether I am on vacation or at work, or if it's a non-work day or a work day, or if I'm around my family a lot or a little, or see if you notice any patterns. And then also be really honest. I think a lot of times people just want to say they're tired and say, yeah, maybe it's my thyroid, when really they're hooked on some Netflix series and they're only getting 5 hours of sleep because they have to get up for work. That's a hard stop. But then maybe they can just watch one more before they go to bed. And I think this is part of our modern life, too, where a lot of us are working from home and some of our boundaries are a little bit softer for when do we start something and finish something. So I think respecting the sleeping time as not something that is of no value, that it is valuable time. It's time when your brain has a chance to store its memories from short term to long term. And it's time for it to reorganize things and allow you to be more useful the next day. It's valuable. Don't skimp on it. And if you think that there's a problem going on with you, like, oh yeah, it runs in my family that everybody gets Addison's disease, and you might not know what Addison's disease is, but if you do because it's in your family, bring that up. You know, we're not mind readers. We really rely on hearing from you about what you think is going on and what you noticed in your patterns. So that'll be one. See your doctor. Two, protect your sleep time. It's precious. It's something that's so important and so poorly understood, and yet without it, we just don't function as well. And then the other thing that I'd bring up as a good idea for a plan is minimize things like sugar and caffeine. Some people find that they end up seeking out caffeine to try to reverse some of the tires that they have. And it's a short-term crutch. It works best if you use it seldom. And it does work. I'm not saying it doesn't. But the more you use it, the less well it works, too. So if you're having two pots of coffee a day, you're going to wake up tired because your body is so used to it that it's kind of relying on the caffeine to get you up to a normal level of alertness. Whereas people who are not drinking caffeine in the day, they're at that same level of alertness without the caffeine. But when they take the caffeine, it's like they just started it again, and it can be very helpful with maintaining alertness in situations that are unavoidable. You're up with your laboring wife in the hospital, right? So these things happen. So, and minimizing sugar too, because we all know what this is like. If you eat some sugary concentrated stuff, it might bring your sugar level up a little bit in your blood, but then your insulin figures this out, crashes you back down. And if you look at people's blood sugar levels while this is happening, they aren't really falling out of a normal range for most of us. I mean, people who have diabetes or other problems with pancreatic function, sure, or liver function, they can have problems with going outside of normal range. But if you think about normal range, I mean, that can be somewhere around 70 to 140. And if you go from 70 to 140 and then right back to 70, that's going to feel crummy. Whereas if you minimize the amount of concentrated sweets that you have throughout the day, your sugar level maintains itself much better. You don't get these ups and downs, even within the normal range, that you might get if you were to have something concentrated. So those were my thoughts about the types of tired and the types of rest and a plan for us moving forward about what can you do about your tired.
When you talked about sleeping restorative, what is a good amount of sleep for us to be getting, and does it vary by age?
It does. It varies by age, and it varies by individual. And most of us, by the time we're into our 30s, we've kind of figured out how much we really need. And if you look at us over a lifespan, newborns, they're sleeping 20 hours a day. The people who are in their 70s and 80s often complain about not sleeping enough, and the sleep is not as restorative, but it also, we don't need as many hours of sleep as we get into our more senior years. I think the best answer is sleep enough so that you are not sleepy. I know that sounds silly, but it kind of makes sense. I mean, most of us know if you cut yourself short by an hour, you're going to be a little tired the next day, and you know what your sweet spot is. And there are some people that do fine on 5 hours, and some people really need 10. And that's just individual. That doesn't mean that one is more slothful and one is more energetic. They might be opposites as awake people, but their brains need that time to process things. So I think, and this is why I bring up that thing about being honest with your doctor, is you're the one that lives with you. You notice these things. You know how much sleep you need if you're an adult. You've noticed what patterns make you feel well-rested and not well-rested.
Such great advice. And before we go, we want to just ask, are you on the mend, please?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing terrific now. I mean, look at how much I can talk now versus before when I had to take breaks between sentences.
Mm. Doc of the Town, Dr. Garrick Olson, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. He is with the Allina Clinic in Hastings. He's also with Refined Skin of Red Wing and Rochester. And you are listening to another edition of Doc of the Town on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.